Before we start, Ms. Jill Garrett of the PET program has an announcement to make. Jill?
Mr. President, Mr. Coates, members of the press, the people at Francis Slocum Park have organized a community, and noticing this need of organization and not enough to do and not enough people knowing other people, we're going to have a picnic. And the entire, all residents of Francis Slocum Park are invited. And we'd like to invite the press, but we don't have enough hot dogs to invite the public because we've had a hard time getting as much as we've gotten. So all of you people are welcome at 1 o'clock tomorrow when the Boston store of Wilkes-Barre is providing entertainment with their tune board, and we'll have a band, and our community is really fun. Thank you.
How many, you mean it's free?
Yes, it's for all the people.
Yes, and people can come. How do you finance it then?
Well,
we
got a lot of donations, and we got donations from the
government. What do you need more? You need more hot dogs or more?
We're short on hot dogs.
How about cold dogs? You use some more Pepsi-Cola, Coca-Cola, things like that. Kids like that.
Yeah.
Hot dogs. Read them. They like them.
Yeah.
Get some out. You're trying to feed 1,000, you got 900. That's only one per person. Nobody can want one hot dog. All right, we'll get it for you. Good luck.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. President, Dr. Michael Eady, I might just say a word about how this visit came about. I went down, as you're all aware, to make a report to the President on the progress that we've made so far. I indicated in the course of making my report that I was confident that the Valley was going to come back better than ever. I reported to the President on the determination of the people, on the great spirit that exists here. And I said, Mr. President, it's my recommendation that at some point you visit these people. And the President took me up on it immediately. And here we are. It's completely spontaneous. The President has not yet had a chance to see the area, so he will not make a statement until after we visit over at Scanlon Field. But I did ask him to be present for the presentation of the first check under the President's legislation enabling the federal government to provide funds to repair the damage to private schools. As you're all aware, Wilkes College suffered the heaviest damage of any school in the Agnes area, and I dare say perhaps the heaviest damage of any school in the history of our country as a result of a natural disaster. And we've worked very closely with Dr. Michael Eady, who has been indeed helpful to us. He's been a leader in the community. This college feeds right into the heartbeat of this community, as you're all aware. It's more than just a college where people from distant places go to learn. It's part of the everyday life and economy of the community. So it gives me a great deal of pleasure in the presence of the President of the United States to present to Dr. Michael Eady a check for $4 million, which is the initial installment on the money that will be coming to Wilkes College. Dr. Michael Eady, congratulations.
This check won't bounce. I cannot express the significance of this occasion to all private education as a result of the efforts of the President's office and the Congress of the United States in amending the Disaster Relief Act to permit this kind of assistance to private institutions that are performing in the public service. And without this assistance, and without the volunteer assistance of so many wonderful people, from National Guardsmen to students to faculty and all of the community people from near and far who have sent donations who have wanted to help in every possible way in the cleanup efforts after this disaster. But with all of that individual effort, it is of such a magnitude that the federal assistance that has been provided under this act is probably the only way in which this institution could have survived in a form that would enable it to continue in its history of service to the community. And I want to communicate to President Nixon and to all of the people who have made this possible, not only the thanks of Wilkes College, but of all private higher education for this landmark legislation, and particularly for this check, which is badly needed to help us pay some bills. Thank you, Mr. President.
The President will make a few comments about the college, and then we will move on. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Dr. Michelini, Mr. Carlucci, ladies and gentlemen, I am very happy that the first opportunity to say anything in Wilkes-Barre is at this small college. If I could speak in personal terms, I took my law at Duke University, one of the larger universities in the country and a very fine university. I took my undergraduate work at a small college, Whittier College, about the size of Wilkes College. Both were great experiences. Both the large universities and the smaller colleges serve a very, very important purpose in our educational system. The point is that we need both. So often people think only and they make contributions and the rest, the contributions to the large universities who naturally have lots more publicity and consequently attract much more funds. I have found in studying this situation over the past 4 years that small colleges across this country are having an increasingly difficult time, apart from any floods, apart from anything else, because costs are going up and contributions many times aren't coming in to the extent that they should. This action here, this check, let us make clear, is not from the President of the United States or Frank Carlucci. It's from all the people of the United States to this small college. But it indicates our feeling that the small college in America contributes something that is very much worth preserving, that we need them. It contributes a spirit where the faculty and the students work together to build a better institution and a better community. So we say we know the money will be well spent. The dollars that come to this small college will probably go further than the dollars that would go to a large university. You need it more. You know what it means. You're going to spend it well. And the beneficiaries will be all these wonderful young people I've seen as I have traveled through the streets of Wilkes-Barre here today. We wish you well. We wish the college well in all the years ahead. And we will continue to do everything that we can to keep the interests of the small college up front, as well as, of course, the interests of the large universities, both of which deserve our support.
Thank you.
Presented by the Honorable Edward M. Kennedy. Introduced by J. Donald Monan. The remarks by Senator Kennedy will be followed by the presentation of the Henry Paley Memorial Award.
I now would like to turn to Jim Lackenmeyer and introduced him earlier from King's College, and he nominated Mike for the Paley Award and will introduce Mike and give some remarks. So, Jim.
Thank you very much, Dick. It, of course, is a great honor and a pleasure for me to be asked to introduce Dr. Michelini, Francis J. Michelini, who is the president of our Pennsylvania Commission for Independent Colleges and Universities, and who is known to everyone as Mike. Mike's biography is easy to recite. He is a native of New Jersey. He served with distinction in the Army Air Corps in the closing days of the Second World War. And upon his discharge, he earned a bachelor's degree in chemistry from Seton Hall University, a master's degree in biology from the University of Delaware, and a doctorate in the same discipline from the University of Pennsylvania. In 1955, with his newly minted PhD in hand, Mike came to Wilkes-Barre and to Wilkes College, where he served for 20 years as professor of biology, as academic dean, and from 1970 until 1975 as Wilkes College's second president. In 1975, he left Wilkes to become president of our Pennsylvania CICU and began a 16-year career of service to higher education in Pennsylvania, from which he has just retired this past January. Mike is married. He is the father of three. His wife, Anne Marie, and his youngest daughter, Lucia, is here along with members of his family. Mike has several honorary degrees, the most recent being from King's, where he gave the commencement address last summer in August, and most recently from Wilkes University, where he gave the winter commencement address in January. All of us in Pennsylvania, the presidents not only of the private sector institutions, but of the public sector as well, are grateful to Mike for his outstanding work for higher education in our Commonwealth. He is as responsible as anyone for the constructive relationship and the cooperation that exists among us, even as we deal with the inevitable tensions that come with competition for students, for individual and corporate philanthropy, and for public support. During Mike's presidency, our Commission for Independent Colleges and Universities has been successful in strengthening the Pennsylvania Scholarship Fund for our students and in establishing a substantial, ongoing direct institutional assistance program for our independent colleges and universities. On the national level, Mike has been active in the State Association Executives Council. His long experience, his seniority, I suppose, have given him the kind of perspective and authority necessary to contribute to the ongoing dialogue about our national agenda and the increasing importance of NYCU as our principal voice in Washington. But Mike has been more than a lobbyist with the legislature. He has been more than an astute diplomat and superb negotiator with our public sector colleagues. He is more than an experienced and authoritative counselor at the national level. Mike is genuinely a facilitator, a gatekeeper, a bridge builder. Mike brings people together. His warmth and his sensitivity, together with his competence and his sense of purpose, have made him the effective leader that he has been and the one who has served us so well. For Mike Michelini, this has not been a job. It has been much more like a vocation or a calling. And Mike, all of us who know you, and indeed all of us here in this room this afternoon, are grateful for the generosity with which you have responded to the call and your wholeheartedness in pursuing it.
I'd now like to call on Cabot Paley for her remarks. Cabot.
Oh, that was wonderful. It's always so wonderful to come here. I always feel like I'm wrapped up in this warm blanket of your affection, its memories of Hank, but also this is just so wonderful that Mike is getting this award. I remember that Hank used to come home from SAIC meetings, and I remember him speaking of Mike's enthusiasm, and how he just carried this air of enthusiasm that really got things done. And he would be very, very happy that Mike has gotten this award with his name on it. Thank you so much for having me.
I now would like to call on our chair, Herb Reynolds, who will make the actual presentation. Herb.
Mike, we could ask you to come forward, please. I'd like to ask your family to stand with you. They're deserving to be recognized along with you, if you would stand.
Thank you. This is my wife, Anne-Marie, and my brother-in-law, Francis Sterner, my youngest daughter, Lucia, my brother, Gus, and my extended family of Cindy Kelly, Dave Irwin, Bob Kelly, and Gary Young and Arlene Peck. Gary and Arlene are from the PACU organization in Pennsylvania.
We applaud you. Mike, it is a distinct privilege for us to recognize you with the 7th annual Henry Paley Award. Your strong advocacy of independent higher education over a 35-year period is an advocacy that has been important to all of us throughout the entire country. Your strong wish that the students within our country might have a choice, I think, has been fulfilled because of your sustained efforts, and we're deeply, deeply grateful to you, and we want to present this to you as a memento and award of this occasion and to wish you the very best in retirement and to extend to you once again our profound appreciation for all that you've done for such a long, long period of time.
Thank you, sir. Very much.
I would just like to make a comment before turning this over to Mike to make his comments. He really has been a superb friend to all of us here at NICU, a special friend to me, a great help. And if there is truly a model state executive, Mike is it. And you all know how much or how important our state executives have been to us all over the country. You have them in all of their states. They work with us. We work with them. And as a result, I think we have the most effective public policy organization in higher education in this nation. And it's certainly due to people like Mike and all he has done. So, Mike, we now turn it over to you.
But I wouldn't do that. As I said to Father Panushka from the University of Scranton, was the chairman of CICU, the meeting that I announced my retirement, and I made some comment about an action that we would have to take and assignments we would have to make, and obviously I was treading some delicate water, and I concluded by saying, but you know, the worst you can do is fire me. And he said, no, Mike, we can renew your contract. It has been a very unique experience to bridge the campus experience as a faculty member, as an academic dean, as a president, and then move into the state policy arena representing independent colleges. And it takes a different mindset. I have developed such a tremendous respect for the state executives that represent you not only in the state houses but are called upon to work in federal policy, which often pits state against state and interest against interest. There is not an easy compromise to states like New York and Pennsylvania and we too, contiguous states with Hank Paley as my former colleague in New York State, and Pennsylvania with Jim Rehm and the Pennsylvania Association, now represented by Gary, had two quite different approaches to how to further the interests of the independent sector institutions in this complex set of relationships with public institutions heavily financed with public dollars. And the characteristics of Hank that impressed me as a young state executive and as a colleague were the three I's: intelligence, integrity, and intensity. He was a man of superb grasp of information and a capacity to bring it into public policy focus on behalf of his constituencies. integrity, anyone who knew him, you cannot find a person who represented more the directness and the honesty of dealing with political figures who he knew well, who had their own agendas, and yet representing the cause that he represented in a way that they had to come to respect. And the intensity of his approach to issues, even within the state executives groups, Bob Kelly and I had to debate Hank Paley and our colleague from Tennessee some years ago at a meeting in Montreal. And I'll tell you, he was a mean man to debate. But we shared the commitment to our institutions and to the students that deserve that right of choice for the kinds of education and the values that are important to them. And I don't deserve this honor in terms of that, but I don't deserve arthritis either. And now I have both. But I am truly honored to, you have awards, and someday in long future history when we're all gone, there will hopefully still be a Paley Award that will represent the kinds of things that Hank represented to all of us. And because of that personal sharing with him, I am especially grateful to the board of NAICU and to Father Lackenmeyer and all of my Pennsylvania colleagues who have come to share in this celebration, and I thank you all very much.
Senator Kennedy is with us, so he is coming into the room. Thank you. So, Don.
Ladies and gentlemen, good friends don't need introductions. And certainly in the person of Senator Kennedy, every individual in this room and each of our institutions have one of our very closest friends. Not only was Senator Kennedy educated completely in independent institutions at Harvard and the University of Virginia Law School, but each of his children have been educated in private institutions as well. But in a day when government is so large and so expansive in scope, and we need to put a human face on it, I think when we think of the Senate, we think first of all of Senator Kennedy, the senior senator from Massachusetts, who has occupied that position since 1962, when he succeeded his brother. He has been a person who has personified some of the finest values that are those of America, especially in a time when so many see the face of America in military terms. He is a person who has represented in his public life all of the very finest values for which our country is known. His advocacy for justice and the justice system, his concern for freedom of people throughout the world who are oppressed, his advocacy for health, and especially the health and welfare of the neediest among us, and above all, his concern for education at every level, from preschool to the highest research universities. Senator Kennedy has personified those values and has identified them with the Senate. And if I could say just one personal note about the senator, I think all of us realize what an extraordinary busy time this is for him, especially since he serves on the Senate Armed Service Committee and so many other important activities. But I happen to know that he started his day today visiting the family, the wife and children of another close friend of education. He began his day by visiting the home of Congressman Silvio Conti. And I think that's a testimony to the type of sincerity and personal concern that typifies everything that Senator Kennedy does. Senator Edward M. Kennedy.
Thank you very much.
President Rosser and friends, and let me say what a real honor and a special privilege it is to be here with this very distinguished audience. I want to thank Father Monin for that extremely kind and generous introduction. That's the finest introduction I have received since about 10 days ago when I was introduced by a fifth grader up in Massachusetts, and they said that I now introduce my favorite public serpent. That is when I decided that we have to restructure our aid and assistance for education in a serious way. I want to really acknowledge Father Monin, because under his able leadership, Boston College has established itself in the front ranks of American higher education, and I might say in the front ranks of college ice hockey, too. And all of us in Massachusetts are proud of his accomplishments. Let me just say this. When I think of the education president, I think of Father Monin. As many of you know, the Senate Labor and Human Resource Committee will soon begin work on one of the most important challenges of this Congress, the reauthorization of the Higher Education Act. And even in the best of times, that would be a long and difficult assignment. But it'll be even harder in the current atmosphere of crisis and concern over the direction of American education and the plight of the federal budget. So I'm especially honored by this opportunity to meet with you and discuss the many challenges that we are facing. And I'd like to talk with you about the context in which this debate will occur and share with you some of my priorities for the reauthorization. Americans have a tendency to take for granted and sometimes criticize too harshly the institutions that are our glory. Perhaps that should be less true in times of national trial and international crisis. But realistically, there is no chance that the criticism of American higher education will diminish anytime soon. The importance of our colleges and university is widely recognized. American higher education is a beacon for the United States and the world. The standard of excellence is set here, and it's set in large part by all of you in this room. And it is said that of the best university in the world, 3 out of every 4 are located in the United States. Probably no other sector of our society can make a comparable claim. In the past 15 years, enrollment of foreign students at American colleges and universities has more than doubled to over 350,000, and the world has been voting with its feet on the quality of our colleges, and your institutions have received an overwhelming vote of confidence. In recent years, you have experienced unprecedented growth, and in the past 2 decades, more than 1,000 new institutions of higher education have been established, bringing the total to over 3,500. Enrollment at four-year institutions has increased to 8 million in the same period, up by 1.5 million students. And higher education revenues have soared fivefold, from $24 billion in 1970 to $120 billion today. Federal support for need-based student aid now exceeds $11 billion, compared to less than $2 billion in 1970. Statistics alone do not tell the whole story. They do not fully reflect your remarkable leadership in expanding opportunities for minorities and the poor, your equally remarkable advances in research, or the many ways in which American colleges and universities are viewed as laboratories for analyzing and solving our most pressing economic and social problems. Nor do the statistics even begin to reveal the contribution by your institutions in educating present and future leaders of other nations. If America's balance of trade could measure the value of educating foreign students and exporting them back to their native lands, we would no longer be the world's largest debtor nation. Notwithstanding these accomplishments, clouds are gathering on the horizon. In spite of the undisputed achievements of higher education, the belief is growing that colleges and universities are no longer giving their students adequate value or keeping their houses in order. That critical view is widespread. It cannot be dismissed or downplayed. To fail to respond effectively will seriously harm your interests, your institutions, and the nation itself. Higher education sometimes seems to be a mirror in which we see the best and the worst of our society reflected. Certainly, you are visible and easy targets. Shortcomings inevitably attract the headlines and the sound bites while advances go unsung.
Many Americans think college costs are too high. A wide range of tuition levels is still available to students, but the rapid escalation in recent years at many institutions is deeply troubling. The current Justice Department investigation of over 50 colleges and universities for fixing levels of tuition and financial aid has contributed to the perception that colleges are ripping off their students. Recent revelations about the high overhead charged on federal research grants fuels the perception that rich universities are ripping off the government. Examples of scientific misconduct have attracted wide public notice and congressional attention. Obviously, every case of scientific fraud taints the scientific record. But when federal funding is involved and taxpayer dollars are wasted, public doubt about academic integrity grows. As the links increase between star professors and highly profitable commercial applications of their R&D, public concern is raised about conflicts of interest and whether the standards of higher education are too lax, too skewed to the personal finances of the faculty. Concerns are also growing that your institutions are too oriented towards research and too little towards teaching. Research and scholarship deserve high priority, but not at the expense of teaching and undergraduate instruction. Last year, Congress was persuaded that campus crime and drug abuse had reached a level where federal legislative intervention was required. We were also persuaded that athletes and other students need more information about the odds of their actually getting a degree from the colleges they attend. Finally, concerns are increasingly voiced that too many students leave your institutions unread, uninformed, unprepared for the world at work. These criticisms are no longer the province of a few individuals with extreme views. Thoughtful and well-regarded observers are making these and other charges. Too often, the critics seem to go unanswered, and negative perceptions spread. And as a result, your mission and reputations are impaired. Private and public funding are also compromised at a time when you can least afford it, because tax incentives for private philanthropy have been substantially reduced. Not every criticism of higher education should be met with a federal response. There is a delicate balance between the public interest and accountability and institutional needs for autonomy. But when criticisms are unanswered and higher education ignores or downplays public concerns, the calls for accountability grow louder and institutional autonomy suffers. Some truths are still self-evident. Higher education should be encouraged and tangibly supported by the federal government. It is a travesty of the nation's priorities to spend so much on Star Wars and so little on Star Schools and Star Colleges. But as you know, the majority of Congress does not always vote the way Claiborne Pell and I propose. As the process of reauthorizing the Higher Education Act begins, I urge each of you to become more active and more persuasive in making your case to Congress. The vast majority of the House and Senate are sympathetic to your interests, but they need more counsel from the higher education community and more of your involvement in the process. Washington tries to respond to the merits of issues, but it also responds to perceptions of issues. And it is essential that you work harder to dispel the misperceptions that are damaging your cause. You are now about to gain an important and well-informed ally in this task. My hope is that with a Secretary of Education in place, who's been a university president himself, and a new, more constructive approach to education will emerge in Washington. Indeed, all of us were reassured by Lamar Alexander's candor and willingness to start over on the critical and explosive issue of minority scholarships. America must not retreat on civil rights and education or any other aspect of our society. Many of you are already working on the issues surrounding the higher education reauthorization. I look forward to your recommendations and to making this legislation a landmark for the times and challenges that we face. I know that Congressman Bill Ford, the new chairman of the House Committee, intends to seek far-reaching reforms in student aid, and I commend his bold leadership. The Senate will also look closely at major changes in student aid. I intend to focus on three questions. What can we do to end the grant-loan mismatch? How can we restore the integrity of student loans and end the plague of defaults before Congress throws out the baby with the bathwater? And what steps can we take to streamline the overall process of financial aid? We also need to find more effective ways to reward economically disadvantaged students who take demanding courses in high school. We should reward institutions that do a good job of retaining and graduating those students. And we should encourage more graduates of two-year colleges to enroll in four-year institutions. I do not subscribe to all the student aid ideas in the administration's budget, particularly the anti-middle class assault on Pell Grants and the slash in funding for work study and supplemented grants. But I commend the president for his willingness to look candidly and comprehensively at changes to help students afford higher education. In the past, on those few occasions, when Congress and the administration have worked together and constructively on such legislation, impressive results have been achieved. The original Higher Education Act of 1965 and the landmark 1972 amendments were enacted because of a shared national bipartisan commitment to expanding access to higher education. With hard work now, we can regain that sense of purpose and achieve a similar landmark result in the current Congress. None of you can afford to be passive bystanders in this debate. Your associations are doing well with limited resources, but your representatives in Washington need increased support and coordination if they are to meet the challenges you face in this era of heightened skepticism and tense competition for limited public dollars.
This program now continues on side two. Please turn your cassette over now. Thank you.